Okay, so now Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 3. Bhakti alone is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Anucheda 45. Maitreya says, "Oh, the dynasties of the Purus has become worthy of worship by the devotees, since you, the protector of planets, who have made Bhagavan the object of your worship, have appeared in it. You make the garland of the Lord's glories newer at every moment, in every word, in every verse, and every chapter." Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.1. The great sage Maitreya thanked Vidura and praised him by reference to his family glories. The Puru dynasty was full of devotees of the personality of Godhead and was therefore glorious, because they were not attached to impersonal Brahman or to the localized Paramatma, but were directly attached to Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. They were worthy to render service to the Lord and his pure devotees. Because Vidura was one of the descendants of that family, naturally engaged in spreading wide the ever new glories of the Lord. Maitreya felt happy to have such glorious company as Vidura. He considered the company of Vidura most desirable because such association can accelerate one's dormant propensities for devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.8.1 purport. Yeah. So again, here then we're seeing, as was brought out by the Acharya before, that the association of devotees makes everything auspicious. Because the Lord is there in everything. He is in the heart. He's in every atom, between every atom. Everything is made up of him and his energies. And so that's the existence of everything. Everything exists on that platform. And of course, in that way, it's glorious. But its actual glory is then the devotees, as they point out here, because they're not worshiping the impersonal Brahman. They're not worshiping Paramatma, but they're worshiping Bhagavan directly. So that makes it glorious. So then when the devotee becomes involved, even though it's God as everything, but it's the devotee who can then interact with God as Bhagavan. That's the wonderful point, because then that association, as pointed out here, Prabhupada says, can accelerate one's dormant propensities for devotional service. So the natural propensity is there for devotional service, because the origin of something is always worshipable for that something. So we, coming from Krishna, being part and parcel, naturally we will have that worship for him, but it's dormant until we accept it, until we take it up. That's our nature. So by association with the pure devotees, then that dormant natural love then awakens, it becomes there. So any other position will bring it very slowly, because if someone's absorbed in Brahman and that aspect and seeing how the glories of the Lord's, you know, everything is potencies are everywhere, it's going to awaken an idea of God consciousness. And then if one sees as Paramatma how he's controlling all of the energies, how he's the Lord of all planets, how he's the, you know, seeing everything, knowing everything, controlling everything, then it will take it a little farther. But it's only when you worship Bhagavan that he is a person. And when we say he's a person, we don't just mean form. We mean that he's a person who he has his own personality and his own interests and his own. And so developing love for that person, that then becomes the actual glorious position. So this Puru dynasty then is full of devotees, as Prabhupada says, and also devotees who are worshiping the Lord is Bhagavan. And so that makes it glorious. So by that, then they're always glorifying, and it mentioned here, at every newer and newer at every moment, in every word, in every verse, in every chapter. So it's like the Jaimini's pointing out in Mimamsa, is that every syllable of the Veda, every word, every verse, every chapter, it all has significance. And so here, then they're taking it, then the Mimamsa comes to its actual natural position where it's glorious because now it's all in connection with Bhagavan. Otherwise, and others who quote, yes, we see Jaimini's bringing it in contact with karma and recognizing that there's the absolute, you know, but you see absolute, but they're not bringing it, none of them are bringing it to the Bhagavan platform. So you see they're dealing with sat, some aspect of chit, you know, but basically no one's actually really dealing with ananda, because that only happens when you deal with Bhagavan and in devotion to Bhagavan. So then you actually get ananda. So that's why you see is that the Kumaras and Sukadev, they are absorbed in Brahman and see the Supreme Lord as Brahman, so they're not offensive. And so they're dealing with Brahman and Paramabhan and all that, but there's no specific ananda. It's just there's no, the natural neutral state of the jiva where they're not disturbed by the material energy. And so that position, since they are made from ananda, there's going to be some aspect of happiness there. But then when you apply it, then it becomes very, very wonderful. You know, it's just like you may be sitting in a very nice environment, but when you interact with that environment with people, then it becomes, that's where the ananda is. Just being sitting there and going, oh, wow, this is nice, it's peaceful, it's aesthetic, or it's clean, or, you know, well-arranged, or, you know, stuff like that, nice. And it gives that neutral state that it's nothing wrong. But it doesn't give the positive of doing something in that state. So we always have to see is that's why Vidura here is being glorified by Maitreya, because of that position of being a devotee of Bhagavan. That's special. The other aspects are nice. And then anything less than that, you know, on the platform of karma and jnana in the material world where it's not connected to the absolute, that's just sad. That's just foolish. So reality starts when you see things connected to the Lord, you know, but actually it's when you see it connected with the Lord as a person in devotion. That then takes on the real platform. So that's what Maitreya is bringing out here in this. Right? Jiva Goswami continues. This indicates that bhakti, represented by speaking about the Lord, is supremely beneficial. Maitreya spoke thus, the verse. Right. So speaking about the Lord, that's the greatest, highest benefit. There isn't something else. So when devotees come together in Ishtagoshti, then it's about talking about the Supreme Lord, about his glories. That becomes supremely beneficial. Right? Okay. Any questions on this or comments or no? Okay. Anucheda 46 to 47. Kapila says, there is no auspicious path for attaining perfection of relationship with the Lord for practitioners except the type of bhakti which is most suitable for realizing the Supreme Lord, the soul of all beings. Srimad Bhagavatam 325.19. Brahma Siddhaye means, quote unquote, for realizing the Supreme Truth. Later, it is said, so Brahma Siddhaye means perfection in Brahma and is realizing the Supreme Absolute Truth. Later, it is said, the mind endowed with steadiness offered to me with pure bhakti alone creates the highest benefit for men in this world. Srimad Bhagavatam 325.44. The mind becomes steady when offered to the Lord by bhakti. Through hearing and other processes, there's nothing greater than this. Etava, Kapila spoke thus. So establishing that when the mind is connecting the senses to the Supreme Lord, you know, through bhakti, there is nothing higher than that. You know, hearing and the other processes, starting with that, there's nothing higher than that. So body, mind, words engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind is consciously doing this to please the Lord, then that becomes with devotion, that becomes the highest benefit. But a bit, but below that is when the devotees are doing that, they can give the highest benefit to the other living entities who haven't come to that platform by the agyata sukriti that they are engaged in that process, which is the highest. And so they get the highest benefit and that gradually, step by step, they come to the point where they also consciously make that decision and engage the mind, body, and words in bhakti. And then they then also advance. So the devotees themselves and the devotees doing that for then the benefit for others, this is the highest possible benefit. There isn't any other higher benefit. Everything else has to be seen in context of this. Right? Kapila spoke thus. Anything on this? Or? No? Okay. Riti, next, through the teachings of the Chatush Kumaras, a comparison is drawn between the results obtained by the practice of impersonal jnana and pure bhakti. Through this, it is established that the ocean of material existence can be easily crossed by only those who take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord through the process of bhakti. Others only desire to cross, but cannot actually cross the ocean. So they talk about crossing, just like the karmis talk about they are going to be happy by performing pious works, or even in pious works, that getting the facilities that they have, those facilities, that situation will make them happy. You know, but it doesn't, because that situation is only dealing with the situational aspect. Then there's the kriya, what you'll do with that situation. But they're performing kriya to get the situation, not what to do in that situation. Then Ananda is the result of working in that situation. So that's the thing, is people talk about getting it, but they don't talk about, you know, are there shows about people who are happy in that position? You know, because where are they? So that's the thing, is that the karmis, it's not happening. They talk about it in the same way from material existence and being happy based on that platform. It's exactly the same thing. They talk about it, they desire it, but they actually cannot cross. Only someone in devotional service can cross beyond the material ocean. No one else can. And that is literal. That is a fact. Because they don't know Satchidananda. And they are not situated themselves as Satchidananda. Because everything being Krishna, if you're only working with Krishna, let's say, as money, then all you'll see is money. That's the only association you have. You'll see everybody that you associate with, how they will get you money, or how you can spend money or interact with them based on money or things like that. I have money, so I spend it for friends and relatives, and that way we'll be happy. It's all about that. Or this person, through him, I can make more money, or partner with this, I can get money, or by engaging this person, then I can make money. So in the same way, is that since they're only seeing the eternal, they want to get rid of all activity and all situations. So only in a situation where you act, then you can get Ananda. So how mechanically they can get, where's the science of getting it? It doesn't exist. They'll talk like it does, just like the materialists talk that if you have this car, you'll be happy. You have this suit, you'll be happy. You have this jewelry or this perfume or this bag or this house. Live in this place, you'll be happy. But it's not happening. So in the same way, it's not that jnanis may be, yes, using a higher faculty of the intelligence, but it doesn't mean they're getting any more results. The goal they want of liberation, they don't get it any more than the karmi gets happiness from his material facility. That has to be accepted. That has to be realized. It won't happen. There's no buts here. The point is as it's said here, it doesn't happen. Because if it did, the four Kumaras would never have to take up bhakti. But they found no, there's more. They don't, okay. Anucheda 48. After teaching jnana, the Kumaras teach bhakti. Okay. Worship Vasudev, the shelter, by devotion to his lotus toes, possessing ever-increasing beauty. The devotees untie the knot of false ego filled with impressions of karma, which the foolish sannyasis who try to stop the senses flowing like a river cannot untie. So we have to take it that the Kumaras are an authority in this gyan. They have taken it however far it can be taken. You can't go farther than this. So in other words, they've gone beyond what Shankara talks about, what Dattatreya talks about, what anybody talks about. They've gone beyond. They've gone to the other side of the ocean of liberation. And they point out is that they, even these foolish, that they cannot untie. It can't be done. There is no process that will do. Any impersonal process cannot undo that knot. That's why then Prabhupada points out that, and the Acharyas point out, is that by going into impersonalism in that way and trying to go for that, that the next thing you end up is going into the area of, you start again. So you've got dharma, artha, kama, moksha. You just put yourself right back down to kama again. And so therefore, if you're wanting that, then you want the dharma, so then you'll go through the cycle again. You just drop from that platform down back into the cycle again. Kritchuro mahan iha bhavarnavam aplavesham shadvarga nakram asukena titir shanti. There's great suffering for people lacking a boat to cross the ocean of samsara, filled with the crocodiles of the six senses. This is the ocean of samsara, difficult to cross by making a boat out of the lotus feet of the Lord, worthy of worship. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:22-39-40. The commentary says, jnana was taught in verse 37. Bhakti is taught in two verses, since jnana is difficult. But it is said, brahmavid apnoti param. A person who knows Brahman attains the supreme, not untie the knot karma. The next verse answers, right? Because it said, those who know Brahman attain the supreme. So then that's what their endeavor is. But then he's asking, but why do the sannyasi, having this jnana, not untie the knot of karma? So the next verse answers, there's great difficulty. Kritchara mahan. For persons who do not have the Lord as a cause of crossing, aplava isha, they desire to cross the ocean of material existence, which is filled with the crocodiles of the six senses, by a process of suffering, ashukena. Therefore, one should cross the ocean difficult to cross by using the Lord's lotus feet as a boat. The both paths aim for the same goal. Bhakti is the abhideya, since the path of jnana is difficult. In other words, it's difficult and it doesn't actually give the results. They go through so much difficulty because, let's say that you're following the best process for doing something that is difficult. For using something that's not quite as effective. Like if I start, but someone who has experience says, no, you should do it like this. And then you find it's actually not so difficult. So that's the whole thing, is that we will think that, yes, through my intelligence, I'll figure out how to get it done. But the point is you think of intelligence and it's just jnana, before you start to work. And when you try to apply that, it never gets very far. It actually doesn't. So the thing is only through vijnana, through experience. So those who know, then they say is, no, the actual way it goes, the only way it goes is through worship of the Lord's lotus feet. By taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, that's the boat by which you can cross over. And so the four Kumaras, then they're teaching this because they have done this. So we can't say as well, this and that, you try a little harder, or stand in your head a little longer. No, they've done whatever it is. And they've not been distracted by anything, right? They never even got into family life. So they never got into the worldly activities. They just walk around with no clothes on. They're 5 years old. so who cares? And so in this way, they've done all these things. They don't have all this baggage, and still they're not able to cross. They're not able to cross. So it's only when you take the Lord's lotus feet like that. So that's what it always points. It's a process of suffering, because it's austere. It's just that people respect that, because they, just like in karma, they think, if I do these activities, I'll get the facility, I'll enjoy myself. So if I negate all those things, then I will, you know, come to the spiritual platform. It's the same material consciousness, just flipping it from one side to the other. If I go for karma, I'll enjoy. If I go for jnana, I'll get liberated. So if I use these the karma, I'll get enjoy. If I reject this karma, then I will get liberated. But the problem is they don't, because the nature of the soul is satchit and ananda. So that means there is activity and experience in a situation. The sannyasis give that up. That means we're talking here, of course, the impersonal sannyasis. So they give that up. And so how will it work? It's not possible. It has to be understood. It's not possible. But because people are working on the platform of material logic, therefore, it seems plausible. And the scriptures, how it's written, you can interpret it that way, though that's not what it means. Because better they're following the Vedas and not, you know, coming to, and haven't come to the point of bhakti, than haven't come to the point of bhakti and don't follow the Vedas, right? Because otherwise, then it makes it so much harder. If you accept the Vedas, then it becomes so much easier, because all the religious processes, which the conditioned soul cannot function without, then you have these nice systems given by the Lord and given and practiced by the sages. If you give up the Vedic version, then you have to make up your own religious process. You know, okay, just like this. Okay, say we're Westerners, so we don't wear dhotis and saris. Okay, as Westerners, what do we wear? What is the thing there to regulate? Because in the Vedas, then it has a regulation. It's unsewn cloth, and you can wear the sewn cloth if you're not doing puja. If you're doing puja, you wear the unsewn cloth. And then, and because the natural thing for human beings to always be engaged in yajna, so it's going to be a regular thing. So you're going to kind of, if you're following nicely the Vedic lifestyle, you won't be too far away from wearing the unsewn cloth. You know, you'll wear, you'll put a little bit here for some social things or this or that, but in the general thing, you'll be closer to the, you know, the standard of when you worship the Lord. So there's a regulation, you know, and then when do you wash it? How often do you wash the cotton? You know, if you put on cotton, you can put it on once and then you have to wash it. Silk, if you don't contaminate it by eating or sleeping or going to the toilet, then you can wear that for, you know, a week, 10 days or something like that for the puja. Take it off, keep it nicely, wear it again. You know, wool then has its, you know, regulation on how it's contaminated or purified, all these things. But now we're Westerners. What's the regulation on jeans or a shirt or a t-shirt or underwear or socks? What can they be made out of? What they can't be made out of? Like this. So where is it coming from? Someone's more natural. Oh, it should be, you know, organic and, you know, free range cotton, you know, or something, you know, like that. And so, you know, whatever it is, you know, we don't pick the cotton off of the plant because it's still there. But when it, you know, drops off and blows across the ground, then we can go running after it and catch it, you know. So whatever it is, we make these things up. There is nothing to regulate here. Zero. So where is the upliftment? Human life means to regulate. So you get out of the animalistic and you uplift yourself to that. Where is the regulation? What do you wear? And to what situation? You know, how do you define what you wear in this situation or that situation? The Vedas define. If you're in front of the Veda, you know, Vedic, you know, giving, you know, you're in front of the devotees, you're in the cow shed, you're in the front of the deities, and the right shoulder is, you know, uncovered. Right, you know, so that's what you do. And then other times, if it's covered in that, okay, you know, but in those times it's not. Where's the regulation in the West? What do you wear where? How do you think, you know, it says that according to your position, your age, your status, all these you should dress. You shouldn't dress beyond or less or more than that. You know, if you're wealthy, you shouldn't dress like a poor man because then you're a miser. If you're a poor man, you shouldn't dress like a rich man because then you're wasting your money. You know, you're young, you don't dress like you're an old man. The old doesn't dress like a young. You know, you dress according to your standard. People expect that. So the Vedas regulate the lifestyle. Where is the regulation? So therefore, then how will they progress? How will they advance? How will they know they're advancing? Because they're giving up attachment to what? And attaching themselves to what? All this remains undefined because it's all centered around the Mahavakya that we're Westerners. So therefore, then where is it? What is this? What is the padati for this? You know, for the what do you call it? Upadi. You know, the Upadi Sutras. You know, Paschatya Desha Upadi Sutras. You know, I mean, what is the thing here? So we see here is that it's for that. So the pious people, they regulate them's lives, and they know that they can see the connection. And then they think the opposite because they're thinking on the material platform. So material is one thing, spiritual has to be the opposite. So they give up everything. But these are material concepts. The spiritual it's reflected in the material world. It's just not connected to Krishna, it's separated. That's what makes the problem. Connected to Krishna, then it's fine. So therefore, that's why the devotees in worshiping the Lord, it's not the difficult path. The difficult path is where you don't use bhakti. You know, that's in general. So the karmis and the jnanis, they're following a difficult path. And then within that, the karmis reject everything. So that's going to be very difficult. And the karmis are trying to work hard, you know, and foaming at the mouth, you know, that pavarga, you know, whole definition is, and, you know, so they're both suffering. They're both that. So only bhakti is the pleasant path and to be situated in. Right, so therefore, the actual path to elevation in the material world is bhakti. It is abhideya. Everything else can be, you know, religious elements that are connected to and used with abhideya. Like you have cooking, right? That's the abhideya. Let's say when you're in the kitchen, and then you connect various utensils and various ingredients to that cooking process, and get that result, cooking result. But so bhakti is abhideya. There isn't anything else that's abhideya. So when you see like this, then it becomes very, very comfortable to explain to people, you know, how they can connect what they're doing to bhakti. You don't have to, it's not about, well, there's this and there's that. There's the Hindus, the Muslims, the Christians, the Jews, the Buddhists, the, you know, this, that. No. It's a matter of there's bhakti. And then who's manifesting what, where? And then here's it's a regulated system. Some things are regulated, but other things are not regulated. You know, I mean, any of these religious things, like we say, Christians basically don't regulate anything, especially the Protestants. You know, Jews regulate some stuff. Muslims regulate some stuff. You know, Buddhists, this, that, regulate some stuff. But at the same time as, you know, how regulated. With the Vedas, then they properly regulate. But the point is the abhideya is bhakti. So it's not about the regulation. It's about the regulation so you can be engaged nicely in bhakti. Continue with the point. Those practicing jnana only desire to cross the ocean. This means they do not actually cross the ocean. Sunat Kumar spoke thus to Prithu. Any questions on this, sir?
I actually have a question about Anucheta 46, if that's okay.
Oh, can you 46. Hear me? Yes, yes.
So when Lord Kapila says a type of bhakti, he means that whatever process you're engaged in, it has to at least have some bhakti. And so it could be any kind of Mishra bhakti. Is that what it meant by a type of bhakti?
Yeah, but it has to be the authorized. I mean, you have bhakti, you know, it means Shraddha to prema, because prema is actually not counted as bhakti. Because we're saying here, by bhakti, you'll get to prema. So prema is in its own category. So the stages to get to there, that's called bhakti. And below that, below shraddha, that's called ajnata sukriti. Right? But it's still, it's connected to bhakti. So someone performing bhakti, you know, somewhere, you know, between shraddha and prema, when they perform bhakti and someone comes in contact with that, gives them ajnata sukriti. Then when someone's within that, it simply strengthens their bhakti and it makes it move forward very nicely. So yes, a type of bhakti, you know, also it'd be here, is you could probably look back, you know, into whether this is Prabhupada's translation or not, and see if there's any other wording that Prabhupada uses. But the point is unless bhakti is touched, it's the Abhideya. So wherever you are in the path, that's all only going to be suitable for realizing the Lord. You know, so that which is coming in the parampara, which is given and approved by the acharyas, by the Lord himself, these are the processes. Anything else, you can make up anything you like. And it sounds good, just like karma sounds good, jnana sounds good, you know, the pranamoy sounds good, anamoy, it all sounds good, but in reality, no one's ever satisfied. No one ever actually gets what they're looking for, because the soul can't be satisfied on those platforms. The soul can't be satisfied, you know, without this Satchidananda being addressed in its full, you know, balance. And that's only in bhakti. And then pure bhakti brings it there. And then when one comes to the platform of prema, then that's actually what you're trying to get to. Is that work? Or
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So in other words, there has to be that conviction that only bhakti, nothing else, can actually give any advantage to the living entity. Nothing else. Means you can say, oh, but you know, in yoga, I feel good, this, that, and then I can do my devotional service. My health is good. Or, yeah, you know, I regulate my diet and all that, you know, the, you know, health foods and this and that. Therefore, I can do my bhakti. Or, you know, yes, I do my exercises. You know, every day I do, you know, this and that. And so therefore, I can do my bhakti. Or, yes, because, you know, I spend quality time with the family and this and that, then everybody's mind's peaceful, then I can do bhakti. These are all nice, but they only become any of any use simply because they're connected to bhakti. On their own, they're not important. So that's the whole thing, is that, and it's also that, that living entity, yes, doing that yoga or this diet or this exercise or this family situation, works for them. But unfortunately, they'll say, no, this works for everybody because I'm the center of the universe. So it works for me. It works for everybody, you know? So that becomes the difficulty. That becomes the difficulty, is that therefore then they're not seeing on the principles. They're seeing details that they used and taking it that itself is bhakti. You know, it's been connected to bhakti. So yes, it's in the fire of bhakti, but you have to remember it's the fire that makes the iron hot. Not that the iron is hot on its own. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So that's the whole idea of going through this, is to elevate oneself to the platform, at least of having that dridha shraddha. By going through having this knowledge, then one should be situated in that platform of knowledge that you understand that nothing else other than bhakti. It has no one, and you can see it in the Vedas, and you can see it in the contemporary environment. Where is it? Where is these perfect beings? You know? So that's the thing, is only through that devotion. Yes, please.
Also, I have a question about that. So the Kamal Shraddha, Dridha Shraddha, I guess there's four different, or more than that, different types of Shraddha. From the Sandarbhas, we saw Laukika Shraddha and Shastriya Shraddha. And I was wondering where the Kamala and Dridha Shraddha, where that sequence came from.
That's connected with bhakti. See, what was the first one? Laukika?
Laukika and Shastriya. So Shastriya obviously means backed by Shastra, yeah. Laukika.
Yeah, bhakti, that you have faith in Shastra, but not necessarily bhakti. Just as said it in the Shastra, like Smartas, they have faith in Shastra. You know, your general pious person, you know, in India that's exposed to it has some faith in Shastra up to a degree. Or they may have in a certain area, you know, just the Shruti, not the Smriti, or just Bhagavad Gita, or this or that, or whatever. But they have something there. So that's piety. That's an aspect of religion. And Laukika, then, you know, what the people are into and like that and what they're into, you know, like, so what goes on there, then you have that. And so then you're inspired. So without some Shraddha, you can't be inspired. You won't act. So Laukika is just ordinary. So they're into the regular things of, you know, family life, getting your money, you know, having your children, raising them, getting them situated, getting them married, you know, seeing the grandchildren. Yeah, all that kind of jazz is all good. Someone's more rich. Oh, that's good. Someone's famous. Oh, that's very nice. Oh, he's proud and nasty to other people because of his richness and this and that. Oh, that's bad. You know, so that would be your Laukika Shraddhas, that they have, they've created, based on the modes of nature, they've created their own idea of you know, what is material perfection, and they have faith in that. And so those who do, so then you see us, if you have a consistent culture, then it goes throughout, and when you don't, then you see it diverges, like in the present, between the left and the right, and you know, religious and non-religious, all these things. And so it diverges very much, but they you know, within that category, they have faith in that. They sincerely have faith in that yes, if you're politically correct, the whole world would be wonderful and fabulous, you know. Or if, like, you know, political correctness is that, you know, that's not going to get anywhere. Successful people do what actually needs to be done to actually accomplish things, you know. So they have that faith in that. That's Laukika. So when we're talking about the Kamala Shraddha, we mean that you have faith in the Lord and devotional service, but it's mixed with so many things that it's fragile, it's delicate. It can get it can get easily distracted because of anartas, you know, these upadis and all that. So then as you go up, so then you take up the association, you have more faith, you get, like, you see association devotees is good. You know, but you can also give up that association. You take up the bhajana kriya, you know, you get into it, but you can also give it up. You know, you go for getting rid of the anartas, but then you can decide, no, this is not me. You know, I am who I am. I have to be true to myself and all that kind of jazz. And so you can get distracted. But Kamala Shraddha, Dridha Shraddha, then means that. So that means Kamala Shraddha will be from Shraddha through Anartha Nivriti. You know, but once you cross Anartha Nivriti and come to Nishta, that is defined as Dridha Shraddha. And Dridha Shraddha then continues there on up to you know, through Bhava. So, you know, then the next step after that is that faith becomes mature, that it turns into prema. So that Dridha Shraddha is getting deeper. But before that, Kamala Shraddha means you can get distracted. So the Dridha Shraddha means it's defined, you know, Lord Chaitanya is defining it, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is defining it, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where you have full faith that only bhakti and nothing else can actually create any benefit for the living being. And that bhakti already includes any other process that can be of any value. You know, probably saying, oh, no, but, you know, all because I'm in my family life or I have money and this and that, and says the Vedas don't describe that. Or where does that come from? Where it means varnas aren't about money. Ashram's not about family. You know, so this idea that no, because so bhakti, therefore you engage varnashram in the service of the Lord, then it becomes connected. But somehow or another, it's this or that. It's two different things. It's separate. No, but Dridha Shraddha means, you know, there's only bhakti and everything else is useless until it's connected to bhakti. So bhakti is the thing. Well, in the Kamala Shraddha, it's kind of like how I view it. It's still much more ascending. You know, it's about my position and my attachments. And, you know, you deal with them, but there's still, one can get distracted because, you know, like nowadays, the political correctness or, you know, these ideas of corporate management or professionalism, these are all anartas. So that one has such faith in them, is committed to them, and it stands in the way of bhakti, that is that's the effect of Kamala Shraddha. You know, so people think I can say whatever I want and criticize this and that because I'm finding a fault and, you know, showing out what's the, you know, but they're not showing what's pure bhakti. They just say, this is not bhakti. But they have to explain how it's not bhakti, what part is not bhakti and what is. You know, that would be like saying that there's a gold ring and it's got some mud on it. Oh, so this is not a gold ring. And just say, no, it's a gold ring with some mud on it. So the mud is the problem. So remove the mud, then you have a gold ring. No, no, baby, bath water, you know, the tub that the baby's in, you know, the table that it's on. In fact, the whole room and the hay will follow, you know, Hitler did blow up the whole bunker, you know, because, you know, it's a baby's, you know, contaminated the water. So it's just, it's absolutely non-philosophical. They'll claim it is, but then show it step by step, show how it is. But no, it's just based on Laukika Shraddha. It's not even based on Shastra anymore necessarily. If Shastra supports my Laukika Shraddha, I'll accept it. But if it doesn't, then I'll just say, oh, but you can interpret in so many ways and push off the Shastra. So basically, you're taking Laukika Shraddha becomes prominent and like that. And if it does, it can eclipse the whole process. And then one doesn't come to that Dhrita Shraddha. But you might see that someone, yes, they're committed to chanting or this or that. So they may have that these direct activities, the five direct activities, they may have some good faith in and be situated nicely there. But when it comes beyond that, then there's no necessarily an idea how to connect all that. And so it becomes very weak. So that's why it's Kamal Shraddha. It's weak. Does that make sense? But once you get to that point, then it continues on. It just gets, because then you get a taste. Once you get a taste, then why you go back? And then you get attachment from that taste. And then from that, then ecstasy comes. From ecstasy, then you have those stages that are there, you know. So then you're who you are. I mean, as the you've heard about Krishna, you're absorbed in that, then you're absorbed in your position in serving Krishna, then absorbed in Krishna, then serving Krishna, and then coming to the platform of accepting just that your natural position. So it's a progression like that. But then the positions of Shraddha, Sarasanga, Bhajana Kriya, Narta Navridhi, these will be within the circle of Kamal Shraddha. And then Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema, that'll be within Nishta. I mean Dhrita Shraddha.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
So that's why it's brought out and it's talked about. So it's not just it's a position once you get there. Otherwise then people have gotten there because they had that faith in those five direct aspects in Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books. But then as they get distracted by all these modern political platforms, then in those areas of religion, then they take on this Kamal Shraddha, or even as we're saying here, much of the time what we're seeing, it's not even Kamal Shraddha. It's like, what has it got to do with Krishna? They say, but they're actually, it's going from the Laukika Shraddha as they're saying what's religious or what's not. The common person says this is religious or that's not, you know, and that everybody has a different opinion. But in reality, then we see the Acharyas, they talk about the religious platform. No, it's element on how you know your relationship with God in devotion and you work in that. That is the actual position of the religion. That's the essence. And then how you connect, how you do those things, they're just different places and different areas use different details. And so they see it like this. So we're saying that bhakti is dependent upon karma or jnana or, you know, some modern kind of concept or things like that. That's just Laukika Shraddha. That's just them and their friends think like that. It has nothing to do with Shastra.
So Maharaj, basically, when we say lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoy, it's they have the potency to instantaneous. living that life, so we get a personal example to see a person and, you know, living according to, you know, the principles of bhakti without including karma and jnana at all. Because that's the rarest thing to observe in the material world. And then
yes, I mean, because the special thing is because you get touched by that spark of the chit potency. Then once that's flowing, because the thing is, as you've touched, it's not that you always, it's not like the senses where it's sense and sense object, like this thing is on the tongue. You can taste it as soon as you finish chewing and swallow, then the taste is gone, you know, or you touch something and it's smooth. But as soon as you stop touching it, the smooth experience is gone. So the chit potency, once you've come in contact with it, then that there, especially if you take advantage of that, have faith in that and respect that, then it flows. So that's the whole point, is the holy name then will bring that, bring that flow. Then you want to get more benefits than that, you know, to raise this above the neophyte platform. Because the neophyte platform, you know, the main element that you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita is how they view devotees. So if they view devotees as those who they make friendship with, or they're compassionate towards, you know, and then those who are not devotees, you are against the process, you avoid. While the neophyte may or may not like devotees, so then you're going to see that aspect there. So it actually comes down to, do you respect devotees or not? That makes you the difference between a neophyte and a Madhyama. So in the same way as Dridha Shraddha means you have faith in devotees, it means the devotional process and all that. And so, yes, so the devotee is strong in this area and that, maybe in another area they're weak. But that area is strong, so then that is respected, and that's where you take that association. So when that is there, then that chit potency flows, and then you can get into more deeper things like the deity, like you said, the deity worship is to bring you from that neophyte to the Madhyama platform. That's his purpose. I mean, someone was telling me the other day, I don't remember if we were discussing it or where I was hearing it, that there's some discussion where in the Satya Yuga, you know, then they have all the good qualities, but as you move into the Treta, as it drops, they don't have the proper understanding of the position of devotees. Therefore, deity worship was introduced. You know, that means that...
Yes, in general.
Means now... the Treta is reversed. So then deity, because you see, as Kapila Muni says, after explaining the whole thing of deity worship, that if you don't respect the devotees and other living entities, then you don't actually understand deity worship. I'm not actually pleased by that worship. You know, you're doing the basics, okay. That much is there, but he really becomes satisfied. The Lord, when you understand devotees and respect devotees and deal properly with other living entities. So the whole point was, is that's what happened in the Satya Yuga. Then they have that understanding. But as it comes down into Dwarka, that starts to become weakened. So because that respect of devotees is the most central point in devotional service, then the first thing to do is introduce deity worship to support that. And so you see, as the deity worship is strong, then you have that more of that community and that spirit and that. And as it gets more, you know, corporate in this and less on deity worship, then you see that thing just goes to hell in a bucket.
Maharaj,
because
to just extend on that, then the next is introducing yagya. So
yes.
How that is an extra support, like, you know, when it goes down, can you explain on that?
Well, from what I can see is, I mean, I just heard that Prabhupada mentioned that point, because then you have the Bhagavat, then because everyone is Paramahamsa in the first stage. Then the second age, you bring in the Pancharatra to support the Bhagavat. So in other words, Bhagavat, when it's regulated in that through deity worship, so you center your life around the deity and that, and work with the other devotees, then you are performing Bhagavat devotion, but because it's done in the regulated form, therefore it's called Pancharatra, right? It's worship of Bhagavat, but the process is Pancharatra. then the Vedic will be the extended religious principles that can support that pancharatrik process. And so therefore then, you know, the yajnas especially, and then everything that goes along with it, because when you see is that in the beginning, Krishna says in the Gita that he gives yajna, and then from that, then, you know, they'll all become prosperous. So there must be that performance of duties and all that. So then the Vedic is textually, so the primary is Bhagavat. In this case, the kind of, it's still primary, the Pancharatrik, but it's the Bhagavat aspect, which is still primary. And then the secondary is the rituals and that they're used, but, you know, they're combined nicely. Then the Vedic will be then the next step down from that, you know, Pukka secondary, or you could say in the thing of that, or even tertiary to there. And so then, and then after that, then there'll be the arts in that, you know, just the common arts that people know that they can use to, support the human existence and, you know, the different things and all that, and it can support the Vedic and support the Pancharatrik and all those things. And so then you have that natural line. So in the Kali Yuga, because people aren't actually qualified as Paramahamsas, they can't do deity worship like they were doing before yajnas. Therefore, only the holy name, which was there and empowering all three of those before, is that's all. You just go to the essence. So they're so unqualified that they can only deal with the actual essence. Well, before it was you see the holy name with, you know, that transcendental understanding and position, or the holy name with the deity worship, the holy name with the yajna. But now it's just the holy name. And so if that is there and that's strong, then the other things can be brought up. Like we're saying, is that if that faith in the holy name, that chanting, and that's there, and one gets that association, even if one is distracted by these other aspects, then the bhakti is mixed, or, you know, the shraddha is still in the kamala platform, by that momentary association, it comes up, you know. And so therefore, then it's so important, because the association of devotees is a thing. And also, if you do the yajnas, okay, this is another aspect you can put. Okay, and the deity worship means, and the Paramahamsas, they're going to get together and discuss about the Lord, or they're going to be on their own end thinking about the Lord. And when they come together, they're going to discuss about the Lord. When you have deity worship, what happens? Everyone comes together to worship the Lord. And then you have big festivals, and then more people come, and it's more elaborate, more absorbing in the Lord. In the yajnas, you see those big shroud, the yajnas, then those things, you're bringing hundreds, thousands of Brahmin, you know, even more, millions of Brahmins together, and then all these people, and then they're always going to sit, and in between, the yajnas are going to discuss the Shastra. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the 18 Puranas, the Mahabharata, Ramayana, these are discussed in between during a yajna. Mm-hmm. So then it's going to bring together the sadhu sangha. Because that's the one in the first, but then you won't do it because of that, because you don't really care for devotees. You won't go and see the sadhus. So deity worship, therefore, you have to be in the temple with everybody else. And naturally, then someone's going to speak, this, that, kirtan. And then yajna is going to be the same. You're going to have everyone come together for a satic thing. And then they're going to hear from the sadhus, you know, from the sadasyas, and, you know, whoever's there, depending on how big. Because you have a group where you have your Brahmins, they're doing, but then you have all the, you know, Narad Muni and Vyas and this and that from all over the universe, and great sages coming, and they're there. And so then they'll speak in between, because the yajna, something will happen in the morning, something in the evening, so during the day that they're going to speak.
Mm-hmm. Also, Maharaj, what I see from the Satkriya Saradipika, when it's mentioned about all the Vaishnava samskaras and yajnas relating with the samskaras, so the person has his own individual desire about, you know, his life, you know, his own life. Right. So then he can connect every part of his life to the Lord. And in the whole thing, always it's mentioned about the Brahman as a central thing, you know, Brahman. Even if you are qualified Brahman and the other person don't know anything, but you bring another Brahman, and he is the Brahman, and you are doing all the activities, but at the end, you have to give all the dakshina to him. So it's all about the associating with, you know, qualified devotee,
Yeah, no, very good point. Very good point. So even like that, you're saying, because I was talking about the Shrauta Yajna. So even yes. here on the Griha, you know, sutras and all that, then it does. And you see Prabhupada's talking about, we take it for, you know, just that it's a ritual, it's a rite of passage, or, you know, some may understand that the subtle benefits and all that, but actually is like you said, the real thing is the association of the devotees.
Mm-hmm. And Advaita Acharya, by bringing Haridas Thakur, he very much emphasizes that point.
That's a very good point. That's a very good example. Yeah, and then you also see is that, you know, say that Bhagavatam spoken at a yajna, Mahabharata spoken at yajna, Ramayana spoken at yajna.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about association. So that's the whole thing. It means like you see on Tapa Loka, because they're Paramahamsas, so they'll all get together and discuss philosophy and, you know, like this, in devotional service. But then as it drops, then you have to have a reason to pull everyone together. You know, like Brahma does a big program, then everybody comes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, got Maharaj.
Very nice. And then Samkirtan means everyone comes together and chants. You chant on your own, but you come together and chant with others. And so naturally in there's going to be association and discussions about Krishna. So then it's the holy name is the essential, but from that point of Vaishnav, so that matches with here, what you're saying is that association of devotees, that's the real thing that the four yugas are trying to establish, is association of devotees, an opportunity for. And then it's through this external, not external, but it is externally manifest rituals in that you will do these things.
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
Yeah, very nice. That's very good. Charuji, happy with that?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Mataji, yeah?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. So that association of Vaishnavas, that's what makes it work. As we saw in the commentary, that Sridhar Swami is making that point that that's when you come in contact with it. You can be pious, whatever you like, but until you come in contact with the devotees, the pure devotees, then you actually get the real benefit. Before that, you're just going around in samsara, but come in contact with devotees. Now you're moving away from samsara back to God. So the association is the real thing. And so, and because of that association, then you're going to hear and chant about Krishna from, you know, as Maitreya again points out in different ways. You make the garland of the Lord's glories newer at every moment, in every word, in every verse, and every chapter. Bhagavatam 3:8.1. So that's the glory. Yeah. Yeah, is it? That's the story, morning glory. That's the tale, nightingale. So that's what we're trying to obtain, is that association. And that the discussion is about the Lord. These other things are, as we see here, is if the Vedic is considered technically tertiary, then let alone other arts and that. Because like today, they're talking about these corporate managements, and they're all arts. They're not science, because they don't know the theory behind it. It's just art. So the arts, the 64 arts and all that, whatever it is that you're doing, that these things are useful in supportive of the Vedic version. Otherwise, then, yeah, what is it? What is anybody getting from it? Okay. Okay, so anything else, or? No? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai.
Jai.